Okay. When we think of the word befarach or beferach, we always think of the Shibud Mitzrayim, that it was an avodas perach that we described, that the way we worked in Mitzrayim was this backbreaking labor, however it is that you want to translate that word. And we find, however, that it's not only associated with work we did in Mitzrayim, it's also with what we're not allowed to do to our fellow Jews. Twice. U'ba'acheichem b'nei Yisrael ish ba'achiv lo tir deba b'farech, and lo tir deba b'farech v'yareisem elokecha. And Rashi explains that the repetition means that the Isser is not limited to a master and slave, but anybody, you know, anybody with a position of authority over somebody else is not allowed to be rode deba b'farech, he's not allowed to put him in such positions. So it seems evident that avodas perech is applicable in multiple life situations. So what exactly does the word mean? Meaning it really behooves us to get a clear, since it's not just a historical description of what we went through, but it's a mandate, it's a requirement of what we're not permitted to do to other people. So it's going to be important to know exactly what the word means. So question number one, what exactly are we not allowed to do? Secondly, the Gemara in Sota in Yeralf and Beis defines the term Avodas Perech, and the Gemara says that the Egyptians gave men's work to women and women's work to men. Now, if you can describe it as backbreaking labor, it's a little bit of a curious way to describe backbreaking labor. Giving work normally done by men to women is indeed backbreaking labor. We're not talking about office work. We're talking about working, mixing cement, and working in the field and things of that nature. That is indeed backbreaking. It's extremely taxing on one's body. Most women are not physically built like men, and therefore have a far more difficult time doing that kind of heavy lifting, that kind of manual labor. I don't think it's too controversial to say something like that, right? It's a physical reality. It's not a political statement, just a description of the way people are made. The flip side, though, doesn't seem to fit. Men may not enjoy what were traditionally women's roles, women's jobs of sewing and cleaning and weaving and whatever else, but backbreaking? Not backbreaking, just something that they may be terrible at. Maybe something that there are men that are excellent cooks, but men on a whole may not be so great at cooking. But it's not backbreaking. It's just the food will be really bad. I mean, this morning I was very proud of myself. My wife told me that at 8:30 I have to change the oven from 425 degrees to 350 degrees, and I remembered at 8:30. I remembered. I did it. And so I made the potato kugel this week. So that's it. So so exactly what does that mean that that's called avodas perech just because a man is doing woman's work? Why is that backbreaking? There is an issur d'oraisa to do melacha on Shabbos just and on Yantav both. All of those melachos, with very rare exception, that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, you're also not allowed to do on Yantav, with the obvious one major difference, that there's chiluk melachos b'Shabbos and ein chiluk melachos b'Yantav. That if a person plows and sows and winnows and bakes, and whatever, so he has to bring all different separate karbanos for three separate violations. But on Yantav, if he plows and sows and winnows and whatever, so then it's gonna be a single punishment, it's going to be a single lav of chil Yantav. So why would that be the case? And if all the melachos are the same, except for ochel nefesh, obviously is the difference in halacha, but if the definition of all the melachos are the same for Shabbos and for Yantav, why is it that there's chiluk melachos Shabbos and not chiluk melachos for Yantav? So let's share the following idea. There are three forms of avodas perech. The simple explanation of avodas perech and the difficulty of a man doing a woman's work is that men are simply not used to doing that work. Doing work that we are unaccustomed to do is defined as parech. I remember when I started teaching, saying a shir was avodas parech. I wasn't used to it. I was used to learning. I enjoyed learning. But saying a shir was a whole avoda. Like if I had to prepare like a 20-minute shir between Mincha Marv or something, that was a day. It took a full day to prepare it. Now if I had to spend a whole day preparing a 20-minute, presentation, I would need 6 days for every day. So it wouldn't be shaykh. But it's not because I didn't love Torah, nor because I didn't think it was an important thing to do. I found meaning in it. It's just I was unaccustomed to it. So I would agonize about it and it not be very comfortable doing it until you get the hang of it. That's one type of perech. Not that it's bad, it's great. Not that I don't think it's something I want to do, it is something I want to do. It's just something I'm unaccustomed to. A second type of avodas parach, lack of familiarity should not be confused with the second type of avodas parach, which is something that not only I'm not familiar with, but I'm not inclined to. I eventually, you grow into a comfort zone, let's say preparing shiurim, you'll all get to that point if you're not already there, because you have a natural inclination to teach and to speak and to learn and to organize ideas and to connect with other people, and that's ultimately going to come out. So on the second level, it's not really avodas parach. There are people who are not naturally inclined to do it at all. There are people who are very into learning even. You put them in front of a room and they absolutely freeze and they just can't function and they sweat and they can't get the words out and they can't think about anything. Their mind goes blank. There are people that are just not inclined to it at all. A woman's work is traditionally done by a woman because men typically, by and large, are not interested in it. It's not something that gives them a sense of sipuk. So the first type of avodas parach is, it does give me sipuk, I'm just not used to it yet. Second type of avodas parach is, it doesn't even give me sipuk. And then a final, third definition of avodas parach is an avoda that I don't see any purpose in. I don't even see what we're trying to accomplish. For many high school students or younger, the study of Gemara is an avodas parach, because they just don't get what we're trying to do. They don't see why it's important. Why does it enrich them? Why is it at all meaningful to them? Like, why do I care that the ox gored the cow? I don't know any oxen, I don't know any cows, and even if I did, they would play nicely together, probably, or I would be careful that they... Like, well, who cares that an ox gores a cow? It's not something that they can connect to. A person doesn't even have to benefit from his work, but he at least likes to know that somebody benefits from his work, that somebody's getting something out of it. When an accountant works on a return for an hour and then discovers that they were provided with the wrong information, my father's an accountant, my wife's an accountant, so they'll get paid for their time because, you know, it's the client's fault, but there's no satisfaction in the work because he knows that nothing was accomplished. The whole thing, got to start all over again. Now that you have the actual forms and the actual information, you got to start all over again. That feeling is exactly what Klal Yisrael experienced in Mitzrayim. The Gemara Sotah Daf Yud Aleph darshens the names of the cities that the Jewish people built to reflect the futility of their work. Pitom shekol ma shenivna hayashokea upi tahom bolo. Whatever they built was just swallowed up by the pi tahom. Ramses shalach shayibonu ma'at hayakol misrosesu misrasek. Everything would crumble right after they would build it. So it was working and working and working and nothing. The Egyptians didn't even need our work. They just wanted to punish us. All they were doing, this is like, you know, imagine if someone were to sue you with no expectation of winning, just so that you could spend money on lawyers, right? That's the whole, that's an avodas, that's parach, because what am I doing? I'm spending all this time to do, and everyone knows what the end is going to be. Like, there's no shiloh what the end is going to be. It's just to punish you. It's just to make sure that you have to put in all this work and all this time for nothing at all. Rav Nevetzal explains, that's why there's chiluk malachos l'Shabbos and not chiluk malachos for Yom Tov. When we observe Shabbos, we're commemorating the Yetzirah that took place in Maaseh Bereishis. Every labor was a creative one. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Each malacha had its purpose. Everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates in the world has a purpose. When we cease from malacha and Yom Tov, though, we're celebrating Yetzias Mitzrayim. We focus on the work that we had to do in Mitzrayim and no longer have to do. So while we may have been asked to do many specific tasks in Mitzrayim, it all led to the same dead end. It all led to the same lack of gratification, lack of satisfaction. You couldn't even look at the end of the day and say, you know what, at least I built this desk and it looks rock solid. It looks like it's going to, you know, serve somebody at the end. You had no sense of satisfaction at the end. All of it was just for that one purpose. All of the malachos were to accomplish the single goal of breaking our spirits. Says Rav Nevetzal, therefore there's no chilik malachos because all of the malachos were just a hechitimtza to get to that same goal. When it comes to Shabbos, every malacha was purposeful. In our attempts to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, we have to realize that our work in serving the Ribbono Shel Olam is not an avodas parach. At the same time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim, he also reassures us that Ein lecha ben chorin el misha osik b'torah mitzvos. We're free, but we're also slaves. And how do you explain that dichotomy? We're slaves, but we love the work. You know, there was a study once done of 200 professions that revealed that the field where people report the most gratification in their profession is clergy. A nice thing to share with smicha students. A lot of guys right now are figuring out, well, I've been, you know, I graduated college and I have, I'm able to do data analytics or Amazon, I assume, driving a truck. I'm able to do a lot of different things. Or I could be involved in Avodas HaKodesh. So somebody has a tzara, somebody has a simcha, so, you know, it's avdus. You know, clergy is avdus. You have to, drop of a hat, you got to be there for them. Someone dies at 2 in the morning, they need their rabbi, and you got to be there at 2 in the morning, and you got to sit there and be there to comfort them, and start arranging, and start, working things out, and start making sure that they have everything that they're going to need. It could be middle of a vacation, middle of a work week, it doesn't matter. But they love it. They love it. They love the avoda. I was at a shiva house the other day, and I was sitting next to Rabbi Neuberger, and someone said to Rabbi Neuberger, someone said that look how lucky we are to have a rav like Rabbi Neuberger. Rabbi Neuberger said, "I'm just lucky to be able to serve such a community." You know, that's the way he is. You're a servant. You're a servant of the community, and lucky to serve, happy to serve, because there's purpose in the work. They're the greatest avadim, but also the greatest b'nei chorin. And if that doesn't convince you, the second greatest level of sipuka nefesh from a job belongs to a fireman. Next to clergy is a fireman. They don't only go at the drop of a hat on a moment's notice. They go into a fire at the drop of a hat on a moment's notice. They're true avadim, like mamish mesiras nefesh, and yet they're b'nei chorin. There's no question as to the value of their job. So the opportunity to be avdei hamakom can only be appreciated. We'll only be able to do that if we avoid all three definitions of avodas perach. We have to be accustomed to avodas Hashem. It has to become habitual, something that we're used to doing. It shouldn't feel new each time. We should get into the proper habits of avodas Hashem. Most of the shailas that you have, you know, if you're the first time you learn through Or HaChaim, the first time you learn through Mishnah Berurah, a lot of it feels new. But then you develop habits, and probably 10 years after someone asks you, "What's the halacha about Netilas Yadayim?" I don't know, but I know what I don't remember what why, but this is what I do, and it was because you developed a habit to do that way, and we become inclined to it. It's something that we're interested in doing, and we see purpose in it because all of it is being an Eved Hashem. It could be that the three staples that the three Amudei Olam, Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim, inspired those three critical ingredients of proper Avodah. First, to be inclined to Avodah Hashem. Torah is something that the Jewish soul yearns for. The Gemara Nida tells us that the Malach teaches us all of the Torah while in the mother's womb, only to make us forget it on the way out. And our Soloveitchik asked famously, you know, what the purpose of learning all of it is for. It's all futile. It's all going to be gone when we come out. So he pointed out, the Baal HaTanya says this, that the point is that it creates this automatic connection, this Ava Musuteris, this hidden connection to the Torah, that even though we don't know the Torah, we're connected to the Torah, so that when we come out and we're able to learn the Torah, it becomes a natural fit for us. If I recall, I think my uncle, Julie Berman, told me once that when they printed the stone Chumash, art school printed the stone Chumash, I think the Stone family insisted that they include some verts from Rav Soloveitchik, that it shouldn't be a typical art school publication without any acknowledgments from Soloveitchik, so that if they're collecting from different gedolim, that they have a few things from Soloveitchik. So someone from art school called up Julie and asked him for a couple of arts from Soloveitchik. So I think this is one of the two or three that made it in, that he put into the idea that the baby learns in the mother's womb in order that he should be comfortable and inclined toward Avodas Hashem. So that's just to feel a sense of inclination toward it. But we have to be used to Avodas Hashem also. And Avoda, and not only inclined to it, but Avoda as accomplished through Karban Tamid and through the Tfilos are the pillars of consistency. When asked to boil down the Torah to one important rule, the famous non-existent medrash, the Hakdama Tzedei Yaakov, is Kevesecha Tasa Borka, Kevesecha Tasa Ben Arbayim, that consistency, constancy of performance are critical to Avodas Hashem, and they're symbolized by Avoda. And then we have to see the purpose of our actions, and the degree to which people volunteer to do chesed and to help other people out is often the degree to which they believe that their help will make an impact. Meaning, specifically in the area of gemilas chesedim, it's more obvious to people. It's more obvious to us that what we're doing really, really matters. They tell a story of Rav Eliyahu Chaim Milodz, who knocked on the door of a big gvir. And the man opened up his door and he greeted him. And the Rav was apparently in a talkative mood. And he carried on a lengthy conversation. After some time, the man tried to bring the conversation inside because it was freezing cold outside. But the Rav totally ignored the request and he continued to talk. And finally, the man's teeth were chattering. He was freezing. He couldn't be respectful anymore. He said, "Rabbi, please, it's freezing out here. Let's please go inside. I can't take it anymore." And the rabbi responded, "Oh, by the way, I'm collecting to buy firewood for Aniyim." Meaning, before securing a donation from the man, he wanted the man to appreciate where the money was going and how badly it was needed. And that prompts chesed, when the person sees that that there is a need and that there's a benefit to it, and that it's not just going to a black hole, it's not just going to nowhere, it's going to something that you appreciate the goal of it. So in our Avodas Hashem, Avodas Perech is exactly what we're trying to avoid in our Avodas Hashem, that we should have an understanding that that our Avodah is something that we're comfortable with, we ultimately are familiar with, and it's something that we should always see a sense of sipuk, that we're actually accomplishing very great things. Whatever we don't understand, whatever tikkunim are going on in the olamos elyonim and everything else, but yeah, at least on a this world level, we can appreciate what a life of genuine avodas Hashem does for a person. How having purpose in your life, having direction in your life, having the ribon shel olam determine your each and every decision, your each and every moment of your day is something that provides so much meaning in a person's life. You know, one of the most moving things that I think all of us, I think I could probably speak for all of you, and obviously myself as well, one of the most moving things that we learned about Dani Morris, Zichrono Livracha, was that schedule, that handwritten schedule. Why? He was a kid. So, well, you know, I'm sure a lot of yeshiva boys have a similar type of schedule. But, like, it's such a perfect description of, or description is not the word I'm looking for. It's such a perfect demonstration of a growing person, of a person who's taking life seriously, and who sees purpose in his day, so much purpose in his day that he wants to make sure that every moment is accounted for. And there's a Nach Seder, and there's Iyun Shir, and there's Bekiyu Shir, and there's calling grandma, and there's Bayit Chan, and there's every single element of the day, every single moment of the day is spent toward Avodas Hashem. And even those parts of the day where there wasn't much relaxation in the schedule, but even those parts of the day that are relaxation, you get the sense that breakfast and lunch are also Avodas Hashem. That all of it is with a purpose. And that's a madrega. That's a madrega that a person is supposed to try to achieve, where we don't feel that we're just spinning our wheels. We don't feel that what we're doing is not getting us anywhere. That we feel a sense of satisfaction. It's something that is, obviously, again, as we said, in clergy, it's something that people feel a lot. But no matter what we do, that's our avoda. No matter what we do, we're supposed to feel that there's a sense of purpose. That's what Lapiansky's whole book was about, for encouraging B'nai Torah who are in the workforce who don't feel that. They feel that they're just wasting their time, that there's no purpose in their work, that they're making rich people richer, that they're just suing big corporations, whatever it is that they're doing with their time. You know, there should be a sense of purpose in what we do, in whatever our chosen professions are, because without that, it's all going to be an Avodas Perech. And our job is never to bring others to Avodas Perech, but not to bring ourselves to Avodas Perech. We should have lives where every moment is accounted for, where we feel this sense of purpose and the sense of being driven toward a life of enhanced avodas Hashem.